information to him. I said, I will pray this sermon will offend people. And he let me know. He said, well, if you're not offending somebody, you're not doing your job. You know, to get up and talk a pablum and just feel good sermons is not the proper way to go about it. But look, I've written up a little warm hand here I'd like to share with you. It says, wanted real mother. Someone who would nurse me. Someone who would change my dirty diaper. Someone who will hold me. Someone who will comfort me when I cry. Someone who will care for me. Someone who will love me. Someone who will always be there, visibly, visible. Someone who will spend more time with me than work. Someone who will treat me as important. Someone who will listen to me. Someone who will talk to me. Someone who will cook for me and feed me. Someone who will clean the house. Someone who will clean my clothes. Someone who will take care of me when I'm sick. Someone who will teach me values and good judgment. Someone who will model the feminine values of being a woman. Someone who will model good manners, thrift, and hard work. Someone who will model decency. Someone who is not competing with the other sex, the male sex. Someone who really wants to be a mother. Someone who is willing to sacrifice their life for me. Someone who is willing to sacrifice their life for me wanting real mother. I never talked to a woman, and so I greatly respect her opinion and view here of what she said to me. She said, I do not want children. I am somewhat of a selfish person. And I've got my life to live, and I want to do what I want to do. And together, they made a decision not to bring children into the world. I greatly respect that from a woman who looks at the woman in the mirror and says, you know, yes, I am selfish. I don't want to bring children into the world because they will be a nuisance to me. I want to live my life. I want to do what I want to do. Because I think there are so many mothers who live a lie in this area. They think they want children, but they haven't counted the cost, the sacrifice. They haven't gone through this little list here that I just finished reading. So anyone that is honest like that, I admire very much. Here's a country western song. I think you've heard it probably by, I think, Glenn Campbell or somebody else. There ought to be a hall of fame for mothers. Creation's most unique and precious pearl. There ought to be a hall of fame for mothers. And I want you to imagine for a moment going into this hall of fame, if we had one here in our world or somewhere, and walking into this hall of fame and looking around and not seeing only very few pictures on the wall. And you'd think, well, where's the hall of fame? Where's all of this millions of mothers? And someone would tell you, well, there's not that many out there deserving of the name mother. Just a few on the wall here. Deserving of the name mother. There has never been a more challenging time to be a mother. There has never been a harder time to be a mother than today. And you would think this obviously to be true. In our modern world of technology, I mean, at one time you didn't have diapers. That you could, you know, they were cloth, cotton material. You had to wash these things out many years ago. At one time, you didn't have the formula that you could buy at Walmart or Kmart. People did that the natural way. Women did that the natural breast their babies for 2 to 3 years, which is the best way. It creates the most healthy and proven. It creates the most more healthy children. You didn't have baby food in a jar. You didn't have microwaves. You didn't have washing machines. Didn't have monitors. Today they have monitors. They're like little walkie-talkies that you can set beside the crib. And instead of me picking up myself and bringing me to the crib to check on it, I've got my monitor here. You know, I can listen to it while I watch the soap operas or whatever and see the baby driving. You didn't have babysitters. You didn't have daycare centers 10 years ago. The people were scattered out and you couldn't just say, hey, I'm taking care of these rubber ants while I'm It's easier to be a mother today. The reason, because it's the most challenging time to be a mother, is that there's so much out there the world has to offer. There's so many opportunities. There's so many jobs. There's so much money out there. There's so many things out there contrary to being a mother that the world has to offer. And the temptation to jump and follow those other things is incredible. There's never been a more difficult time to be a mother. You will struggle with that if you're human. With all the world has to offer. This is, like I said, this is why I respect the woman that said, now, ancient times, I think there was a view you see in the Bible that in order to be fully woman, you were not fully woman until you became a mother. In ancient times, it was sort of and it's easy to see why they were hoping that some woman would be the mother of Jesus Christ. And so it was more of a look at as a curse if you didn't have children in ancient times. A great curse upon woman. And I think today, we can carry over that same view that as a woman, unless I am a mother, I'm not fully woman. That's true. A lot of women need to have children and should have children. But it's not true for all. It's not true for all. And the ability to look at the woman in the mirror and ask yourself, do I really want this? Do I really want to make this sacrifice here? Someone who is willing to sacrifice their life for me. Is this what I really want? I can give you a definition of a mother here. One is to attend to the wants and comfort of another. To attend to the wants and comfort of another. One definition. Let me give you my definition of a mother. This is Dave's definition of a mother. And hold on to the chairs here for this one. It is the woman, the person, for the persons to spend the most time with them. Isn't that simple? And the woman, the person, or the persons can be babysitter, daycare center, school system. It's simple mathematics. You just count out the time you're with the child. You can't count the time the child is asleep. That's out of the question. The time you're with the child. And you can find that the mother may live very well. School system, the daycare center, the babysitter, grandmother. There is biological mother, the one that bears the child, and then there's the real mother. Keep it. It's not the same thing. The biological mother and the mother that is the real mother. And that real mother can fall into a long category of different structures and organizations. Big structure. And you have to ask, okay, who's teaching your values to your child? Is it the school? Is it the daycare center? Is it grandma? Who is it? I always like the commercial TV where the grandmother, the black lady, is the thing in the telephone commercial. She was saying that, I'm not teaching the children, but she said, at the end of the day, they go home. It's the best thing about it at the end of the day. Is there any solution for the problem? Mothers who are not deserving of the name. That's what I like to talk about. Mothers who are not deserving. Is there any solution for this problem? You know what my answer is? No. Nothing short of the kingdom of God on this earth. There are answers out there. There are ministries out there. But no one will listen to their voices. That's the problem. No one will listen to their voices. Several years ago, I had this idea of reaching people where they're hurting. And I thought, well, if we reach people where they're hurting, this will work. And Mr. Hicks, he gave us all subjects. He said, okay, you do this. You have to watch Mr. Hicks. Tell him my idea, and immediately he delegates something else. And I found out, don't ever mention the idea to him or his joke principle or the next, the second you say. And he said, okay, you take, he had the elderly, and he said, you take single parents. Point to me. You work up something, a tape, an article on single parenting. That was the most incredible silly, but because I hadn't finished it. Says, hey, if you can raise intellectual children and end up going to college and building a successful career, you must be a great mom. As a result, women push their children to extremes, to accomplish great things. This is not success. The truth is, this world has yet to come up with an acceptable standard to measure success as a mother. In fact, if you try to measure up to the world's standard, it would probably just become overworked, underpaid, and overtired. Recently, I watched a movie where Pants was in the title, Baby Boom. Now, I didn't like the movie, but it's about an incredibly successful businesswoman called a millionaire, or part owner of some type of business. She's got a briefcase, and someone gives her a baby. I mean, I don't know how she got the baby, but someone just gives her this baby. Trying to be a mother and hold on to this business. Just incredible complications, right? And it did a job on that one very well, I thought. Society teaches women that success in the workplace is life's greatest reward. Society teaches women that success in the workplace is life's greatest reward that is out there. Now to me, this is funny. Because if any woman would just walk up to any man who is worth a nickel, who is not lazy, and say, tell me about it. What's his life? Work. And I'll tell you what it's like. I mean, who wants to curse a man who is going up there? I don't even want to curse. You know what the curse of man is? Here it is. Listen closely. Cursed be the ground for your sakes, and sorrow you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and you shall eat of their sweat of your face shall you eat bread, so you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, to dust you are, and to dust you shall return. That's the curse of man right there. In other words, you're going to work your rear end off until the day you die. Now, I don't even want the curse. and I don't want the curse of woman either. I can't have the curse of a woman comparing children, but the idea that the roles would be reversed. Who would want to reverse that? Is my point. Just ask anybody and say, tell me how great it is to work your rear end off until you die. And they'll inform you about it. What a grand thing it is. I think it is the pride of life that makes any mother desire the curse of man. The pride of life that makes any mother desire the curse of man. The good woman. Good woman. Not all mothers have to work. The pride of life that makes any mother desire the curse of man. I guess it is, though, that the prestige of the false illusion of success that a lot of people are after. Climbing up the ladder, being noticed, maybe. I have a hard time understanding that, because my work humbled me. I've never been, you know, a stonemason can only be so proud of his work. I mean, you can't get so excited about that, right? I remember one time I was working on a job with a woman. This was back when Jimmy Carter was president, and interest rate was 21%. A lot of people were out of work. We were still working, because we could still be homeowners when interest rates high. When interest rate is low, we go to new construction. I was working on this job out there mixing mud for mortar hood. Chopping, you know, you're mixing cement with a mortar hood. You know, a repugnant job. I mean, I'm telling you. I had a contractor one time, so he took the mortar hood out of my hands and said, "Give me that, let me show you how to fix that stuff." You gotta chop it, you chop it, you chop it. And then you look up at the sky, and you see if there's any clouds in the sky, and you start praying for rain. And he was right, you know. So I could get out of that mess, get away from that. But this lady was watching me work, this grueling work, and she said, she goes, "I have a job now. Been out of work for months." And she looked at me and she said, "I don't need any more work." What was that? She repented of that. She repented of that later. She came back out and said, "You know, I'm sorry." She said, "I really do need any more work." Anybody who's got a job has been out for quite some time. And so my work sort of, you know, the pride of work and success and money and prestige is not a part of my work, so if my work is getting humble, hopefully, in that area, one area anyway, as far as work is concerned. But I mentioned that not all mothers have to work. Some do, single mothers understand that. Not all mothers have to work. But when Rebecca came along, Teresa and I, we made the decision together that she would quit farming. And as a farmer, she made something like $15,000 in about 6 months farming. And it was missed. It's a sacrifice for her, really, because she, I probably don't give her the money that I should. But you can ask her if she misses that $15,000. But it came from the one getting off the side. But it was a sacrifice that we felt this is more important to be a mother to give. So, you don't always sometimes think, "Well, I've got to work," but not necessarily, because God can bless you for making the right decisions. Number two, why are some mothers not deserving of the name? I think the second reason is that we are a society that hates commitment and loves it to win out. And I'm talking about the area of divorce. We hate commitments and love it to win out. One of the things I've always been amazed about is, in talking to any of my friends that have gone through divorce, I will always inquire about their parents before them. And nearly every time they will say, "My parents, yeah, they got a divorce." They don't know that. I mean, I found that out, but you can tie that back in. Their parents have problems and they have divorce. Everyone I know who's gone through divorce has told me that. And what I realize is that there's a programming that takes place. The children look at your parents and they say, "Well, when hard times come, you call it quits. That's the way you do it." And so there's a programming that takes place. And divorced mothers are left alone to provide for themselves. We are a society that hates commitments and love to be there. Number three. And so this creates others who are left alone and just cannot fully. And a lot of times, well, both are to blame. I know it's divorce, but it's no fault divorce law. I always kind of pick it up on that wording, no fault divorce law. Okay. And no one's at fault like a divorce. But, anyway, not deserving of a name. Number three, the main mother is unwanted pregnancy. Unwanted pregnancy. How many mothers would say, look, I didn't plan this. We didn't want this. This was not a part of our plan. And again, you know, it's a terrible thing. I have a niece that happened to her and kind of sets up early in her age. The wife before her now is committed, has to be committed to this child. And it's a terrible thing to see that. You know, our society, I think of the dating game. How many of y'all dated when y'all were little? You know what I'm dating? You know what dating is? Dating is when you put two people together with my long brain already. We'll come together alone. That's what dating is. And the dating concept, there are people who are advocating what I have a tendency to lean toward. Is because, you know, the dating game, dating has been around for less than 100 years. The traditional concept of dating. And it's a 20th century invention, but if you look at a chart, you'll find that when dating was inculcated in our society, the concept of traditional dating, you find the divorce rate, STDs, and unwanted pregnancy just fly off the end of the chart when the concept of dating is introduced into our society. And a lot of people are advocating a courtship, which I have a tendency of wanting to agree with. And courtship is something that you do if you allow it. Of course, there's a difference here between men and women. You know, the Bible is clear that the daughters are given away by their fathers, and sons pursue a wife. So the guy is pursuing, and the daughters are, the father gives her away. But I have a daughter, I don't know. Sons, I'm sure this is maybe a little bit better, but, you know, if I allow the guy to come to court, my daughter, in my own environment, and my daughter, you sit there, you know, you sit up, you know, what are you doing there? You watch them the whole time, but I do believe in a physical death. This is, you know, it's an oppression of the folks. I know what that did for me. I mean, what does it do for you? I speak as a man. What does hugging do for the grass and do for you? You don't know anything about that. I'll pray for me. But I know what it did for me personally. It's just leading to something, you know, perfect. But in the whole courtship, you know, people are in and out. They're never alone. People are in and out. Children are in and out. They can go to the garden. They can look at the motorcycle. They can look at the pool. They can do this and that. Talk, communicate. They can do all kinds of things in the home environment of courtship. And but they're never alone. Someone said, Rip Bradley said that we fathers think more of our material possessions than we do our daughters' hearts. I mean, I got this lawnmower that I want my lawnmower. And I've got this motorcycle that I get upset if there's a smudge mark on the chrome. I mean, I clean this thing. Bring up this car. You need it and you scrub that and you clean that. Well, if the guy walked up to you and said, hey, give me the keys to your motorcycle. Give me the keys to your sports car. You would say, yeah, I'm going to take it. But when someone comes, this dud comes up, says, give me the key to your daughter's heart. You say, yeah, sure, don't know, you don't care who you are. Now you're away. We get out of here. We think more about material comfort than we do our daughter. And it's amazing. God, you wouldn't dream of doing it. Father, send our daughter now, protected by Father's love. And what he was saying is this, he says that you're, whatever is lacking in the home, emotionally, your daughter will pursue that in a plan out the room. Whatever is lacking in that home environment, whatever the Father did not, the Father never said, I love you. The Father never permits the daughter. Display of emotional love there. The daughter will go out and pursue, try to fill the emotional void in the man. If the daughter grows up and she's never listened to him, never pays her enough attention, she will pursue that with the first man, the emotional void. She'll try to fill that emotional void with the first man that leads out of the world. Whatever is missing in the home environment, the daughter will pursue in a man. About this goes on in a subconscious state of mind. The guy out there, you know, tapped him on the shoulder and said, hey, look here, she's emotionally, she needs some help. No one's told him that. It's a spiritual connection, that automatic connection that God looks over at the room and he sees this girl, and she looks at him, and a connection is made. He knows, and I encourage his wife, that this emotional boy is there. Give that to her for a price. Yes, I'll fill the emotional needs. You can make what I want. And what I want is, you know what I want. You sell yourself to me, and I'll fill your emotional needs. When I made up a book on shame, becoming wise of child sexual, how to protect your children from it. But just a quick quote here. As the pedophile, the whole strategy is this: the key to our molester's success is simple. Find children from poor home environments and do a better job at their emotional and physical needs than the parents. How this works. Find children from poor home environments and do a better job than the parents of the meeting emotional and physical needs. Many single parents and married ones also are so wrapped up in themselves. Their children all just to get the glass out of their hand. Of the success. This book said that the child molester will spend years with a child. It's not a thing where he just goes out and can manage it. He spends years. Who's paying attention to the child? They'll spend years before they can be in advance. Driving the child what their needs. So, yes, we send our daughters out protected by a father. So many mothers are deserving of a name because we have failed at meeting their emotional needs in those critical needs. And I think that as parents, we have to stand in the pathway. It's not just what we're going to do, what we want to do. You know, I have no control over my teens. You know, that's just up to them. Serious bit. The reason I only have one child is it's too much for me. The risk here, what I'm taking here, is too much. So I'm looking down. It's the travel. I think a lot of people say, well, this is all the bridge. I've made mistakes. I realize that I haven't been this way for many. Well, what can I do? Well, we can't. Well, God, we not repeat the same mistakes. Says the earth is square. The other one said the earth is square. You know, sometimes they're going to look uncanny, real, you know, will anything. Because this is my daughter. Whatever it is, I believe it also. It's almost a ludicrous of extreme to be gone to. Your parents could have made mistakes, great mistakes. And make a conscious decision to live up. Mother, all the name of Christ. million things he gave me. Oh, means only growing old. See, where she said the same thing. Anxious for the heart of pure soul. Ease for the eyes of love. Shining are right and right should always be. But mother is no mother. World, a word that means the world. Means the world. Let's look at some scripture here before this. Proverbs 31 is a model mother. Let's quickly go through these. Proverbs 31, verse 10 says, who can find a virtue of woman? For her price is far above rubies. And I think the dictionary says that virtuous means morally excellent. The proverbs refer to the very first woman. The woman's mother is morally excellent and pure. Proverbs 31, verse 10. And this is the main message part. But she keeps herself above reproach. She has high morals and lives by the principle. Thank God that it says, the heart of her husband is to trust in her, and he shall have no need of more. The heart of her husband, thank God, the woman is trustworthy. Trustworthy mother. A godly woman will do her best to maintain the faith and trust of her family. There's never any doubt of her commitment to her husband or family. You know, I think one of the things that in my mind is I can always trust her to be there, which is an incredible thing. When I was not a latchkey kid, I would come home and it was always there. That stands out probably more important than anything. Trustworthy to be there. It wasn't somebody else. It wasn't a babysitter. It was her. Verse 12. She will do him good, speaking of her husband, and not evil all the days of her life. She is committed. A godly mother does not act out of her own selfish ambitions. Rather, she acts in the best interest of the family. Society, we see mothers doing anything and everything. That's the way it is. That's not the family. That's the great thing that is out there. Verse 13 through 16. She seeks wool and flax and works willingly with her hands. Like a merchant ship, she brings food from afar. She rises also while it is yet night and gives meat to her household and portion. Of her maiden. She considers a field and buys it. The fruit of her hand she planteth and makes it. The girdeth of her loins and strengthens her arms. My godly mother sees what needs to be done before it can be done. And I can only imagine, you know, I think of needle as a mother thinks, you know, like, how many women has a mother clean? Or if you can count that up, think right. What a mother does. Mother gets too tired of all the work they do. But a godly mother knows what is expected. It doesn't. There are expectations. Verse 17 says she the one she's already following. Verse 18, she perceives that the merchandise is good. And it goes not out by night. Another thing, a godly mother is positive. Negative moms rear negative children. If you all know. Verse 20, she stretches out her hand to the poor. Yea, she reaches forth her hands to the needy. Compassionate. Another is compassionate. Not only for her family, but for others. So, glory be. Remember one time visiting the hospital, there was a lady there that came by and gave some food to his grandfather. Something they were talking about the woman that said that she spends a lot of her time at the hospital caring for people that you know they're strangers to her and just doing good things. It was a beautiful example to see that. And this because none of none of her household, for all her clothes is scarlet. She makes no covering to tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates among the elders of the land. She makes fine linen and sells it and delivers it to the merchants. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall be in time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue all kindness. She looks well to the wind, but her household it needeth not the bread of godliness. Godly mother gives her family a good name. Speaking of being dignified, that is, some people think dignity is a position of power, but it's not true. Character is earned, right? You know, character earns respect from others. Not money and things and possessions and everything. It's character of a woman. And in verse 28, her children arise up and call her blessed. Praises her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but yet thou exceedest them all. Favor, faithful and beauteous thing, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands, and in her own works praise her in the gift. And this verse basically speaks for itself. That, and it also mentions that her husband and her children will speak well of her. I'm going to close out by a couple of things here that I can apply to mothering. The first one is entitled, When You Thought I Wasn't Looking. The author is unknown. When you thought I wasn't looking. When you thought I wasn't looking, I saw you hang my first painting on the refrigerator, and I wanted to paint another. When you thought I wasn't looking, I saw you feed a stray cat, and I thought it was good to be kind to animals. When you thought I wasn't looking, I saw you make my favorite cake just for me. Little things or special things. When I wasn't looking, I heard you say a prayer and believe in God I could always talk to. When you thought I wasn't looking, I felt you kiss me goodnight, and I felt loved. When you thought I wasn't looking, I saw a tear come from your eyes, and I learned that sometimes things hurt, but it's all right to cry. When you thought I wasn't looking, I saw that you cared, and I wanted to be everything that I could be. When you thought I wasn't looking, I looked, and I wanted to say thanks for all the things I saw. Thought I wasn't looking. You know, it is like it is all the little things that mean so much. That a lot of go unnoticed. The story here is entitled The Gift. The Gift. Because it was a warm summer day, God placed it in her hands. She trembled with emotion as she saw how it appeared. This was a very special gift that God was entrusting to her. The gift that would one day belong to the world. Until then, he instructed her she was to be its guardian and protector. The woman said she understood and took it home, determined to live up to the faith that God had placed in her. At first, she barely let it out of her sight, protecting it from anything she perceived to be harmful to its well-being, watching with fear in her heart when exposed to the environment outside of the shelter. She had formed around it. The woman began to realize that she could not shelter it forever. It needed to learn to survive the harsh element in order to grow strong. So with gentle care, she gave it more space to grow. Enough to allow it to grow wild and untamed. Sometimes she would lie in her bed at night, feeling of inadequacy overwhelming her. She wondered if she was capable of handling this awesome responsibility placed on her. Then she would hear the quiet whisper of the gods reassuring that they knew she was going to do this, and she would fall asleep during the night. The woman read each of her responsibilities as the years passed. The gift had enriched her life in so many ways by its very presence that she could no longer remember what life had been like before receiving it, nor imagine what life would be like without it. She had all forgotten her agreement with the gods. One day she became aware of how much the gift had changed. Longer had a look of vulnerability about it. Now it seemed to grow with strength and steadiness, almost as if it were developing a power within. Month after month, she thought, as it became stronger and more powerful. fun that would add to the beauty of the essence of the world around it. And the mother let her child go. As I look at the next generation of mothers, I do not see mothers who are going to be more deserving than that. Generation that is coming tends to have a sinking heart in your feeling, like, this is not going to be good. If you think of generations that produces more than this children come along, I see mothers who are going to be less deserving in the future for the next mother. And my only hope and prayer is, thy kingdom come. Thy kingdom come. I'm sorry, that is the solution. There are voices out there that provide information, but no one listens to them. And Isaiah 49, verse 15. Isaiah 49, verse 15. Isaiah 49, and verse 15. Can a woman forgive her son that she should not have compassion on the son of her womb? Give and forget, yet I will not forgive. This is yes, they may forget. And as one minister said, there are people with mothers. Child and just perfect and put it into a microwave oven, you know, and then of course killed it. It's a sad thing. And the hope is that God's kingdom come and will solve this problem. There ought to be a hall of fame for mothers, creation's most unique and precious world. And heaven help us always to remember that the hand that rocks the cradle. God will see.